listening to the Money Monopolizers podcast, helping you take control of your financial destiny. It's about time that we invest more in our financial literacy and work towards building generational wealth. If you think you're ready to do the same, then you've come to the right place. Alex, Marlon, y'all ready? Let's get this bread.
What's good, everybody? It's Alex Camuno here, and we are back with episode 101 of the Money Monopolizers podcast, and I'm here with my co-host, Marlon Wallace. Marlon, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing real good, bro. For one, I'm really excited just to be in this environment again because, man, I just think about, like, just the growth and progression that we've had going from just, like, the first episode up to where we are today. Like, it's crazy how much stuff can happen, like, within 100 episodes. Like, you just continue to grow. Like, it's just basically the things we tell a lot of people is that just, like, do it ugly. Just get started, really. And a lot of people don't really ever understand the concept of that. Like, once you just, like, take the step out there and just do something that you really don't know much about, like, you just learn along the way. And as you learn along the way, you start meeting new people. You can gain more knowledge from people that you meet. You start adding improvements to your process and things like that. So before you know it, you're in a studio like this. you're bringing on guests like the guy we got on today. So I think it's going to be a really good first guest episode. So I'm really excited for it. How about you?
I think, you know, that's a good point that you mentioned that, too, because I mean, we started this podcast 2 years, or I guess not at this point, episode 101, it was over 2 years ago. So, and when we started, you know, it was a whole lot of trial and error. We didn't know what we was really doing. I mean, it was really just taking action. I remember even saying in the beginning, like, yo, we just got to make it past 3 episodes. We got to make it past 5 episodes. Right. Because, you know, we see a lot of podcasters, they get in the game, they start, you know, they don't get the success immediately. 3 episodes in, you don't see another episode after, you know, 4 or 5 months. So, it's, you know, I'm not going to call out no name. But, you know, I've definitely seen that happen multiple times. So that's why we always try to tell people, just take imperfect action. Just get started. You're going to figure it out along the way. And that's really what this podcast has been about, too. I mean, I think I'm a perfectionist just in terms of, like, the production quality and, like, everything that I try to put out whenever we do put any type of content related to the podcast out. But even then, it's like, I mean, I have such a high standard for it, but everybody can't. I'm not saying everybody should do that. People just have to put something out, right? And so that's really what I think people need to understand in terms of, like, I mean, 100 episodes is a lot of episodes. It took over two years to get to this point. And I mean, it's not even like we see some podcasts like EYL and, you know, other podcasts, they blew up pretty quick. And, you know, we haven't necessarily had that at this point in time yet, but it's about consistency and continuing to put it out, because the only way you can really fail is if we quit at it. So
that's it. No, yeah.
So,
and I'm super excited for, like, the guests we got on today, too, because, matter of fact, I just want to talk about the guests for a second. Not just this guest in particular, but all the guests that we brought onto the podcast. Like, I think those have been, like, little small milestones and small wins along the way, because, like, they have just continued to inspire us of the things that are possible outside of podcasting, outside of real estate, but just anything, just in life and just day-to-day living. Like, you're able to see the lifestyles that they're able to live because of what they've been able to build.
Yeah.
And so by seeing them come into our space, like, we're like, man, we can achieve so much if we just continue on this path, like, just by doing a podcast. Like, we just – so I think, like, the first 10 – how many episodes was it before we had our first guest?
14.
So we had 14 episodes with just us, and we didn't even have a guest on the podcast. Yeah. People would have quit way like you said, episode 3 was our goal. That was a goal for a reason. We can talk about that offline, but that was a goal for a reason. But people would have quit episode 4, 5, 6, all the way up through 14. If you just continue going, never quit, like, you don't know what's going to come out of that. Like, you just – it's something good is, like, down the road. You just never know. But if you keep on pushing forward, something or somebody will come into your life that's going to impact you and move you to the next season of your life. So
that's a fact, That's a fact, man. And I think it's just a testament to, you know, just how we do everything in terms of staying consistent at it. So it's dope to see. I'm happy for where we at. Definitely continue to grow. So – but, yeah, man, I really want to get into, you know, the topic that we got today, our guest that we got today. We got a heavy hitter,
man,
in studio today. The first in-studio guest sitting with us today, Mr. Tony Bryant. Man, this dude is a beast in the real estate game. I was reading his bio earlier, and I was like, man, I don't even want to ruin the surprise. I want him to, you know, kind of tell it. Because I was reading, I was like, yo, this dude got some statistics in here. Because, you know, I like to, you know – we bring people that have done stuff on here, it's good to, you know, especially with the titles of the podcast and stuff, you can make it, you know, a little more appealing to people. So I'm happy about that. So, Tony, how you doing today, my man?
What's up? What's up, fellas? Let me just first of all say thank you for allowing me to be your first in-person guest. That's quite an honor. And to say that you've done over 100 episodes, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But, I mean, you guys are definitely professional at this point, right?
Yeah,
you know what you're talking about, know what you're doing. So I'm the one that's nervous. but anyway, guys, you know, I mean, and to say that you've done this, you guys are both 25 years old and you're already doing this. I can't even remember what I was doing at 25, man.
Hey, I saw the bio. Don't be humble. I saw the bio. He was killing it.
Yeah, appreciate it, boss. But nah, you know, I'm Tony Bryant, Tony B for Profits on Instagram, CEO of Homebuyers Texas. I'm a real estate investor. Actually, I can say entrepreneur / investor. I invest in a lot of different things. I'm a part of partner in certain clubs, restaurants. I have 11-18 wheeler trucks, dental offices, but primarily bread and butter is real estate for sure. Author of this book, Power of Mental Wealth, written with Les Brown and Johnny Wimbry, Heather Monahan, also the author of Wholesaling for Profits, which is primarily a real estate book, and then also My Daily Bread, which is more of a 151-day read, a devotional / journal. So, but yeah, excited to be here, fellas.
Yeah, man, we appreciate you. We appreciate you having it on here. So how we, you know, been doing this since day one, it ain't even going to change today. We really want to get back into, you know, take us back to the beginning, man. I know you grew up out here in Texas. Shout out to Crosby. And, you know, that was kind of your stomping ground. So I really want you to, you know, get into your background, you know, relatively briefly in regards to kind of how you grew up viewing money.
You know,
how that transitioned.
Nah, for sure, man. I mean, you know, just like any kid from humble beginnings, you know, I'm going to say I come from the mud, but, you know, I come from really, my parents got divorced when I was 9 years old. You know, dad got into, you know, hitting my mom and, you know, and you know, domestic abuse and got into drugs and so forth. So my mom divorced him, and then we wound up living in Section 8 housing. You know, I just kind of grew up from there. We, you know, stayed there for about 8 or 9 years. In that process, as I became a teenager and so forth, I realized, hey, this isn't for me. This is not what I want. I don't want to be around unmotivated people. I don't want to be around drugs, crime, and all of that. So, you know, I didn't know specifically what I wanted to do growing up. I didn't have any mentors or anything, but I knew what I wanted to avoid. So so from that, you know, at 14, 15, I started working at a local country club by my house, wait staff and so forth. And then, you know, I watched from afar how certain people moved. Mm-hmm. And then I knew, and then I go back home to my environment, and like, you know, I want something different. I don't know what it is. I don't know how I'm going to get there. But, you know, I started to shift my mindset and move in the opposite direction of those that were around me doing devious things.
Okay, I like that from the beginning, because you kind of had a little bit of both perspectives. You're working at a country club, which is a little bit more high-end. It's not necessarily just going down to McDonald's or something.
Yeah.
Like you see a different caliber of people that come into a country club. So
I'm
curious, how'd you even get to the country club, though? Like, you didn't just see a restaurant or something that you saw, like, down the street?
It was really just convenient, you know. Apartment complex I lived in was right outside of the neighborhood. It was right down the street. They were hiring, you know, and, you know, took the position, stayed there for 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, till I was out of high school. And it was quite an experience.
Yep, and I think
a lot of fun.
On top of that, like, just the background that you had growing up, I think a lot of our audience can resonate with that, because I think there's a lot of people who are being raised in those single-parent households that are not having the glamorous, born with a silver spoon in their mouth type of family when they first are born. So I think a lot of people can really resonate with that. So what I'm trying to figure out now is, like, what were you seeing, like, in the country club? What were you seeing in the, like, what type of people were you seeing come through there? What were their occupations like and stuff like that? Like,
it was more... I guess it was more about my mindset of wanting something different. You know, even the drug dealer on the corner wants something. Everybody wants more, but people just don't know how to get it. You know what I'm saying? But like you said it initially in your intro, take action. Take imperfect action. You know what I'm saying? open your mindset to possibilities. You know, when I was coming up, you know, everybody idolized, you know, of course, Michael Jordan, which they still do to this day, given, you know, looking at shoe sales, athletes and entertainers, you know, that's really what it was. And, you know, I wasn't, and, you know, obviously my, a lot of my friends and schoolmates and so forth were wearing Jordans where I couldn't really afford Jordans. But at the time, I could buy like a Jordan basketball card or something like that. So what's ironic is, you know, I'm a big collector of cards and coins and so forth. So the things I could buy at the time wind up being worth a whole lot more than what they spend on the shoes.
Right.
So, you know, that was kind of some of my first investments, really. You know, and I still have some of those cards in a huge collection today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just small investments like that, and then, you know, just seeing how a lot of these folks moved in the country club. I mean, they own small business owners, really.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's funny, I look at my lifestyle today, and I go back, and I look at the country club, like, they don't really live as well as I do now. You know what I'm saying? They
right.
live, you know, what I considered mansions were just really four-bedroom houses or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's funny. As a kid, you see things, mm-hmm. you see things a lot, a lot different than you do as you mature as an adult. But, I mean, they were small business owners and just folks that were, you know, hardworking. A lot of them were college educated. Some of them weren't college educated. But they just the way they moved and interacted with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
was it majority, you know, white folks? Or
it was absolutely white folks.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, some sweet people, some racist. You know what I'm saying? I've experienced it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, that's always interesting, too, because, I mean, that's a really interesting place to work at, too,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, as a kid, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
So you're just getting exposed to anything, right? So,
yeah.
You know, if you're exposing yourself to, you know, what these people are actually doing, then, you know, it can pique your interest, right, to some extent, because it's like, okay,
right.
What are they doing differently that we're not doing, right? Because as you don't really necessarily understand, you know, socioeconomics to a high level to understand, like, racial wealth gaps and all those kinds of things at
right,
14
absolutely.
Years old.
Right.
So you're just thinking, like, they live a different life than me. They must have did something differently. So at that point, you know, you're 14, 15 years old. How did you transition from that? Did you end up going to college, or was it like,
yeah,
what happened at that point?
No, good question. So yeah, for me, I put myself through school. I have an MBA, but I had two associate's degrees, a bachelor's degree, and I earned my MBA. But throughout that entire process, man, you know, I grew up, you know, it starts with a conversation at home. What type of conversation are, you know, these folks having with their immediate family, right? So my dad, you know, he was, like I said, in his words, he was sick or whatever, right? So he didn't contribute to my, you know, to my giving me advice or mentorship or nothing like that. So I had to just kind of watch from afar and grab what I can grab from folks that I saw were doing well, or at least I thought that were doing well,
mm-hmm.
and just progressing in life. So again, like I keep going back to, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew when I saw something that I thought was positive. Oh, you know, and of course I admire folks with nice cars and
mm-hmm.
nice houses and just stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah, I mean, it has an effect on you as a kid. You know, at certain times I felt embarrassed because I didn't have anything. You know, certain times I was hard on my mom because she wasn't with my dad when we had things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously going back, you know, it was all his fault and everything. But, you know, just carrying myself through life, I've just learned to, you know, just take initiative and put myself in those situations and struggle through school.
Yeah.
But I was able to make it and, you know, like I said, paid off school.
No debt.
Paid off school when I finished. And you know, progressing throughout life, I've had a number of jobs. And, you know, I became a millionaire at 29 years
really?
Old. Yeah.
Okay, now we got to get into that. You got to brush over that.
And see, that's why I said I told you he was being humble.
Right. Yeah, man. So what happened with me was, so I was working, you know, when I was in school and everything, I had some friends that owned dealerships, right? So I was working in
car dealership.
Yeah, car dealership. And I had a brother that came in and bought a Prowler from me. At the time, a Prowler is it's a Plymouth Prowler. It's like a sports car, basically. He paid $40,000 cash. I hadn't known anybody that just can come in and pay $40,000 cash. That was a lot of money for me at the time. And basically, you know, over the course of a few years, you know, he started to just kind of give me insight on a few different things. Introduced me to his broker, which she was a real estate agent and also a broker, a mortgage broker. You know, so she would do deals. You know, it would basically use my credit. It's not what you were supposed to do. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. So that was my intro to real estate, basically. Yeah. I was early 20s. They would use my credit, his money, and we flipped these houses. So, and they would do what's called stated income and all of this stuff. So long story short.
Wait, how did he get money?
He was an older guy. He was already experienced in real estate, already experienced in real estate and so forth.
It's like a partnership deal where you bring the credit, he brings the money.
Pretty much. But long story short, you know, wind up salvaging the relationship with her because she did some shady stuff. But I got in a situation where we did a commercial deal when I was probably like 24, but it didn't mature until I was like 28 or 29. Mm-hmm. So that's how, you know, I got a check for 900 and something grand.
Really?
Yeah. Man, so it was a commercial deal. I didn't realize I was going to have to hold on to it that long, and I didn't realize that's how much money I was going to make. But
Your first deal in real estate?
No. I had been doing small deals.
Okay.
You know.
Flipping or rentals?
Flipping. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hadn't held on to any property.
So you was doing this from like your early 20s to your mid-20s, right before you did that big deal?
Yeah, and that was one deal specifically in why I say, you know, I no longer did the deals with that particular agent because she put me into a deal where, you know, it was basically a family. They put $50,000 down, used my credit. But I was on all of the financing, and we shared the title, basically. So the agreement was they were supposed to be out of a certain time, and it carried on for a few years. So I had to go to court and, you know, put them, you know, get attorneys involved and all that stuff.
They're not making one payment, though.
No, they were, but it was they were slow. And sometimes they've missed payments and so forth. But at the end of the day, that taught me a huge lesson, you know, and then, you know, to not obviously use my credit for someone else. But, yeah, just not getting involved with partnerships or relationships that you don't really know the person, or, you know, they don't have the best intent. Yeah. So what I'm saying, not all money, all fast money, easy money isn't good money. So, yeah. But that just kind of set me, you know, to you know, that was a good experience in real estate. But I was also in corporate America at the time. You know, I was early in my days, I was in the rental car business. I had worked my way through a major company, ultimately became sales and marketing director over a company. Yeah. And then in 2008, I got laid off, and I became a full-time entrepreneur in 2008.
Really? Yeah. Really? So you got thrown into the wildfire.
Yeah. So entrepreneurship, yeah, for sure.
So, okay, so at this time, you're 28 years old, you get a check for, you know, $900,000. You know, for a lot of 28-year-olds, you know, you got a decision to make at this point, right? It's like, yo.
Kind
of. Depending who you are, I guess. So it's like, yo, I could either, you know, go, you know, have some fun, or I could, you know, invest into my future some more.
Right.
Right. So how did, you know, obviously we know how.
So for me, yeah. So for me, obviously, you know, I invested in a lot of different things. I made a lot of bad choices. But luckily, I was in the rental car industry. So I ain't really go out and have to buy all these cars or whatever. And when I got laid off, I went into the exotic car. So me and a business partner owned a exotic car off of Westheimer, Westheimer by James Coney Island. So I was an investor in it. So basically, you know, I had the opportunity to drive these luxury cars without necessarily, just like, you know, a lot of folks today will go out and just buy these cars or whatever, or just spend an obscene amount of money on them, right? I didn't have to do that because I was in that industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of got my thrill that way, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, I made small investments. Like I said, some of them were good, some of them were bad. At the end of the day, I couldn't share basically what I had with a lot of my family and friends and so forth because I grew up the way I grew up. you know, it, you know, and maybe for you guys as well, I'm not for sure. You know, folks had always had their hand out. So, you know, for just to tell folks I got some money was just basically telling them, hey, come ask me for anything you want. They did that regardless. But, yeah, so that kind of, you know, was within me to kind of keep it to myself.
So you didn't have that too many conversations with any family members about, like, what you came into?
No, because my mindset was still trying to make it. And plus, I was busy with, you know, trying to excel in my corporate job, trying to make investments, trying to, you know, I've of course, I helped my mom out and do certain things. But, yeah, it was, you know, a lot of family borrowed a lot of money and didn't pay it back. And
of course.
Same thing with friends and so forth. So, yeah.
So, because I want to kind of fast forward and we'll go back. What does your, you know, real estate portfolio, if you don't mind us counting your pockets slightly.
Yeah.
You know, what does your portfolio look like today in terms of real estate?
So I own 3 townhomes, free and clear, off of Leland, by the Toyota Center.
Okay.
I get about $3,000 a month on rent. Wow. I think my cheapest one I get like $2,900 cash flow. Yeah.
Sheesh.
And then you know, my primary resident, and then I'm an investor in certain other businesses, but as far as like my company real estate, we have a wholesale team. We do some wholesaling. I also loan money to other developers and some flippers, some investment projects.
Yeah.
And then you know we also sometimes we don't do like Airbnb, but we're entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, possibly doing that. Yeah. So yeah.
So what is right now? Because you know I'm trying to see, you know, what is your bread and butter in terms of the primary
what is your,
strategy,
your that primary you, niche that yeah, you that you that, focus on
in
you,
real estate?
Yeah,
we do more wholesale than anything.
Wholesale,
yeah, okay. More wholesale than anything.
Why?
Because we have a team of them. Yeah, because we have a team of people that do it.
Got you.
You know, at the same time, again, you know, I make a lot of money on loaning money.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. But you know, me being one person, capital's tied up until the project's mature. Yeah. So you know, just in lending money, you know, I'll probably make $300,000-$400,000 this year, just in lending,
just off of interest,
just in lending alone. Yeah, so I take an equity position though.
Oh, you're doing JVs.
Yeah, I do I take an equity position. Yeah,
we're doing a JV on this flip that we were selling it for like $550,000, and they got 23%, so they gonna make a good amount. Yeah, and
I want
to do a private loan, but
see, I mean, for me it works out because you know, I mean, and it also helps them out because you know when you do a hard money loan, you got to pay monthly, the whatever the note is, and also taxes.
Point.
You know, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it, at the end of the day, it winds up being about 25% of my money. And, you know, I take 50% of profits, but it'll wind up be about 25% of my money sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So then question real quick. As far as, because obviously with real estate, you have the five wealth generators of real estate, right? So we have our cash flow. Which is the money that you make, obviously, after you pay all the bills.
Yep.
So after your rentals. And then we have our equity, or, you know, well, we could say loan pay down / equity buildup, right? So as the tenants pay down the loan, you get wealthier every month when they pay down that loan for you. And we have our appreciation. The property values typically go up. And we have our depreciation tax benefits, obviously. And then I like to consider leverage another wealth generator just because I think real estate is – that's the only business where you can go get a 96.5% loan with no experience in it from a bank. With that being said, how are you like primarily, you know, going after cash flow? Or are you going after, because obviously, I mean, you're doing a bunch of things. So, you know, you're getting, you know, you're building wealth in a bunch of different ways.
Right.
So what is, I guess, your strategy is for? Because a lot of people, you know, they focus on the rentals because they, you know, that everyone's mindset is passive income. Mm-hmm. But nobody really thinks of the other stuff that comes with the real estate as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, you know, definitely passive income.
Yeah.
You know, passive income, you know, regardless of what's going on, as long as I have, you know, good tenants, basically, they can pay their mortgage, they can pay their rent. You know, I got money coming in every month. Right. So that's primarily. And of course, you talk about the equity in the property, you know, especially my specific areas that I'm in, you know, is constantly appreciating. They're close to downtown.
Oh yeah.
Most of my stuff, you know, and not everybody's going to start, you know, with a $300,000 townhome, you know what I'm saying? So, it's just my situation. It just kind of worked out that way. So I don't care if you can get a house in the hood and make, you know, $200-$300 a month. Cash flow is cash flow.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You have to, you know, crawl before you walk.
What cash flow do you usually aim for if you're looking for trying to get your cash flow? I mean,
for me, my personal target is always, like, I'm building I'm loaning money towards 9 townhomes, but for myself, we're looking for, like, I don't know if you know anything about the East River project on the East End.
No.
Basically, it's kind of be like, it's going to, you know, kind of be like a San Antonio Riverwalk on the East End of 59, right by the kind of by the original Niffus. I don't know if you know where that's at.
I'm not
But anyway, the point is, it's a high rent district. Yeah. So we're about to buy another townhome over there and basically doing the Airbnb.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it kind of with a twist because I have a G-Wagon on order, right?
Jeez.
So what I'm going to do is lease it out with that one. You know, give them the option to lease it out
with the G-Wagon.
With a G-Wagon.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So, you know, and I know there a lot of there's so many ways you can make money.
Yeah.
So many folks are doing a Toro thing.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but like for me, my whole experience been in the rental car game, you know, like
yeah.
And I've done I've done all that before even Toro existed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
So yeah. So I think that's just the way to go, man. You know, as my tenants get ready to move out, I think I must convert them all to Airbnbs. Mm. So and just kind of have luxury car for each one of them. Mm. Yeah,
that's unique.
Yeah,
that's definitely. Like a
but to answer your question, man, I mean definitely cash flow. I mean
cash flow,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And that's what I figure. I mean, you know, it sounds like you living, you know, pretty good life right now. So you got to
do that. We still have goals, man. Nah, we ain't nowhere near where
we want.
I got 4 kids, bro.
One of them's 18 too. So yeah. No, that's a fact. So, hold on, Marlon, did you want to go?
The fact he just said we still got goals. Cause I always think about when you were a kid, like you would see. The guys that came to the country club,
yeah.
You would see them, yeah. And that was the goal. Like, man, if I can be like them, if I could get what they have, that'd be great. Once you get there, you're like, okay, I'm here. What's next? It's almost, I think, like you will celebrate, of course, but
right.
Then you inevitably, you're going to see somebody else somewhere that's doing a little bit more. Like, dang, I can do that too. And
I don't look at it like that, man.
Really?
I mean, I think initially, okay, you know, yeah, as a kid, seeing these folks, not even just have those things, just have not come home to a dysfunctional environment or household.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to a normal environment was cool, kind of what I wanted, really.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, but yeah, of course, I wanted the things that they had and so forth, and I knew it took a lot of hard work, discipline, and consistency to get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the main thing in my life. It was just discipline. You know, I was like, I grew up in a loving, happy, you know, home, but there was no discipline. You know what I'm saying? So, in the sense that my mom was like, she was just like, cool as long as we were happy as kids. And, you know, our bellies were full, we had a roof over our head. You know, it was kind of like whatever else we wanted. You know what I'm saying? You know, but, you know, at the end of the day, everybody wants, like I said, everybody wants more. Yeah. Even when you have everything, it's not even always about money.
It's not.
You know what I'm saying? Because you want, you know, I was hearing someone talk the other day. They were talking about, it's really just all about, you know, philanthropy and giving back and doing this or whatever. It's not about money. You know, well, at some point, it had to be about money.
Yeah.
You know, before you were able to contribute to churches, contribute to various charities and so forth, you had to chase the bag. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to or put yourself in a situation for the bag to chase you mm-hmm. more so than anything. So, yes, it's always about money to a degree. You know what I'm saying? But beyond that, it's about, you know, obviously being peaceful, joyful, having a healthy environment, healthy friends around you that support and love you and just want to see you win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was going to go to anyway. Like, mm-hmm. it's not just saying what's next as far as like how much money can I make next. It's really saying like I've reached this goal in my life. This was a monetary goal, mm-hmm. but now there's other things in my life that I may want to also address. So you may be in a certain position now with cash flow, but you're like, okay, I still got things I need to, I want to achieve, some things I want to do. It may be with health, it may be with wellness, it may be with philanthropy.
Oh,
may,
yeah, all man. That type look of at stuff. Me, bro. I need to some pounds. I'm starting some a challenge on Monday. So yeah, I mean, definitely got to continuously work in every area of my life, health being one of them. You know, I done fell off tremendously, but hey, that's okay. Give me a few months, I'm gonna be
mental
back.
Mental discipline.
That's what I talk about.
That's a good thing about it.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, finances. I could lose everything tomorrow, but can I start again?
Yeah.
Do I have the mindset and the, you know what I'm saying, the mental aptitude to take me there again?
Yeah. Right.
My answer is yes. You know, I think once something is in you, you know, that's what you can't lose. The government can take everything away from you, right?
Can't take your knowledge.
They can't take you know, your knowledge and your work ethic and so forth. There's so many ways to make money today. I'm not worried about that, even if I lose everything. You know what I'm saying?
It's in you, not on you.
Right. So, you know, I started to think about, and you know, a lot of this is in my actually next book for the most part. It's about how I want to be remembered. What's my legacy like? Exactly. You know what I'm saying? How many people are going to be at my funeral? You know, I'm even looking at, like, what is my eulogy going to read? You know what I'm saying? So I'm thinking about things like that now and how to, you know, properly transfer my assets to my kids. Yeah. Like, I got, you know, LLCs and a trust, you know, so I got to put things in, you know, educate people around me to prepare themselves and do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't grow up with, my parents didn't have no will. My grandparents didn't have any will. You know, that wasn't taught in our household around the table. So I pick up things from various situations I'm in and conversations I have and, you know, try to protect myself and, you know, not be afraid to lose anything, man.
Yeah, I love that. So one thing I want, because I want to make sure we do the people justice and get into a little more real estate stuff.
Right.
So one thing, obviously right now we are in, you've been in real estate for quite some time. So, you know, we've been obviously probably, I guess, six times the length that we've been in here. Right. But in our experience, in our lifetime, we haven't seen a market that has been different than what it has been for the last, I guess, decade. Right. In terms of a uptrending market, and especially over these last really 12 months since COVID, and, you know, obviously the government printing money, all these kinds of things that are contributing to the rising real estate costs. So right now it's especially in Houston. So we're in Houston right now and it's really competitive in terms of getting good deals. Because right now you can go, I would say you can always go get a deal. It's not going to be a good deal, right? There's a price for every property, but, you know, you just got to be able to make money when you buy. That's the philosophy I like to believe. I don't know if that's what you go by, but. So what I'm asking, I really want to get into kind of how, what's obviously because you have a wholesaling branch of your company.
Right.
So what strategies are y'all using to actually still source deals right now in a competitive market like this? You know, are y'all doing direct mail? Are y'all doing, you know, ringless voicemail, text message?
Right.
What is it?
Well, I'm not going to give y'all a sauce, man. No, I mean, realistically, I used to do a lot of mailers, but I would get less than a 2% return. So we really don't focus on a lot of mailers right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, how we're set up right now, I have eight virtual assistants, basically, and I have a team in the office that penetrates other wholesalers that, you know, they'll bring us deals, basically. Mm-hmm. So we really focus on, you know, obviously, we do a lot of coaching. Basically, we have a lot of wholesalers that bring us deals that they think they're deals. so many folks. Let me back up. I kind of love that, you know, I don't know if it's because I'm in real estate or is it just maybe because it's the climate. There it seems like 50, you know, investors pop up every day. New investors, like all of a sudden everybody's invested, but they never really done a real estate deal, right? I love the entrepreneurial spirit in that, you know, the fact that people are wanting to grow. You know, I'm a huge advocate of entrepreneurship, you know, self-employment, empowerment, and so forth, right? But, you know, a lot of these guys that are bringing us deals are, quite frankly, greedy in a sense that, you know, you know, obviously, I don't even know if you guys know the formula for, like, wholesaling, 70% less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so I'm not going to get into that. But, I mean, you know, the numbers don't add up. You know, they want a $30,000 split, and the seller's not making anything, you know, and they want us to put a few grand on top of it. It doesn't make – like, a lot of these deals, a lot of folks bring us just don't make sense for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you got to create win-win-win situations for every party involved. You know, and I try to educate them and tell them that, because, you know, that's what's going to, you know, allow you to have longevity in the business.
Yeah.
You know, and once you are doing well, do two deals and buy a property, or do three deals and buy, you know, invest in your own property. You know, acquire assets while you're doing this. This game isn't going to last for long.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, we just happen to be fortunate. My business partner, Robert, Mr. I Buy Houses on Instagram. We formed Homebuyers Texas about 3 years ago, three years ago. And, you know, that's when we decided to develop a team. He's been a real estate agent for over 15 years. And then, you know, I've invested here and there, so forth. So, gotcha. Yeah.
And that's that. Okay. Because right now I think obviously wholesaling is like, whenever people say I want to get into real estate, it's right. Like they either want to be a wholesaler or they want to be an agent. A realtor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how especially real estate is high. I mean, I was at a restaurant the other day and, you know, talking to the waiter, you know, and it's like, hey, yeah, you're just having a conversation. They're like, yeah, I'm trying to get my license. I'm like, man, everybody trying to get their license.
Right.
Everybody trying to get into real estate.
Right.
And that's how you just know it's hot. It's like, yo, I'd be talking to the bagger at the grocery store and they telling me to get into real estate. Okay. Not to say that they can't, but that's
right. Just
how you know it's hot. So the reason I brought that up is because, like, right now, it's a lot of these people that are getting in, they're getting in, you know, people are really greedy. They're trying to just make as much money as they can. If they can even, you know, find a lead in that sense, which is competitive in itself. So, you know, right now, a lot of the wholesalers, they're taking up pretty much all the, like, there's really, the spread is already pretty thin. So
right.
A lot of the wholesalers are coming in and they're taking up pretty much the remaining thing. So there's nothing left for the investors. So, like, we had Lance Smith on here. I guess a few episodes ago, episode 88, and
right.
He talked about, you know, the fact that right now there's really no spread in a lot of these deals, right? So whenever you're getting deals, you know, you're saying that how are you making them work in terms of, you know, the numbers and that kind of stuff? Because because essentially y'all are double wholesaling it, right?
So sometimes, I mean, you know, but we also buy a lot of deals, first of all.
Oh, so y'all keep them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We also buy a lot of deals and maybe make smaller improvements and then flip them, hotel them, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just comes back to educating these guys on, you know, how to properly do a deal and what makes sense for the market, what makes sense for everybody involved. And if they're not really with that, we can make the decision how to do business or not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, really, it goes back to educating, like, these guys, especially if they've been in the – you know, everybody think they're gurus now. They've he's got a $50,000 check or whatever. All of a sudden, they're a guru. Or if they've been in the business for a year, all of a sudden, they're a guru. You know, and I'm not trying to knock anybody, you know, because there's a lot of folks giving education that's only done a handful of deals.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to call receipts on anybody. But if you're going to bring a deal to – a true investor who's going to either buy a property and so forth, and if you have that approach, then you're going to, you know, if you have the approach on every single deal, you're going to, you know, you're going to be blackballed in the industry for the most part. It's a small world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially dealing with certain players like us, you know, who do a lot of business with mostly everyone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just about going back to ethics. You got to put ethics in everything you do and create win-win situations. If ethics don't exist, we don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I think I know Alex has been trying to hit on that, because in the current market conditions, it's like the margins are going to be very slim. So I think what you're seeing is that a lot of wholesalers or wannabe wholesalers are getting into the market, seeing that it's a hot market, but they're saying, you know what, I want to get into this. I want to just get into the game. I want to get into real estate.
Right.
And so I found a deal that's not necessarily a good deal, but I just need to get into something. Like, I'm trying to figure out where can I just want to get in the game, get in the door. So they bring this to you, and they're like, I know these margins are pretty bad. I just want to get this deal accepted. So now I don't even necessarily know if they're being greedy. It's just this is all that they can find at the end of the, like, they want money, of course, but they don't know how to make that deal work. So I know Alex is trying to hit on, like, how are you? So you're in the same market.
Right.
There's no difference like between the place that you're in versus the place that they're in. They're both in Houston. They're both in whatever area that you're investing in. So now what's giving you that competitive advantage to find the deals that other people are not finding?
I mean, just relationships, really. Like I said, we have a whole pool of folks that bring us deal. Of course, we pull lists like everyone else, and those are the lists that our virtual assistants call. And then once they get to a certain point, then we take over from there. But as far as, like, you know, a lot of folks that do business with us, they know what we look for. They know what type of margins we like to have. They know what type of situations that we can help them in. You know, we're not only helping the seller, we're also helping the investors, because we also do education. We teach wholesaling classes, basically. Mm-hmm. My business partner is in Miami right now, speaking on stage with Big Business. I don't know if you know him, but he does a lot of real estate flipping. He's out of Philly. But, you know, we try to give as much education as we can to, you know, and develop these relationships where folks just bring us deals. Yeah. Bring us deals, because we're not just about the margin. We ain't trying to make 50 grand while you make 5 grand. We're going to make it equitable for everybody.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you learn the process. You learn what we look for, and we do business with you or not. We do at least 12 wholesale deals a month. Wow. So, yeah.
So if someone is listening right now and they're saying, man, I really want to get into wholesaling. Real estate is just so competitive right now, but I really want to get in. I really want to, you know, get my first deal, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to that person in terms of what they need to do to actually get started, to actually find a deal, and to actually, you know, remain ethical?
Right. So I mean, obviously, you know, we're talking about wholesaling, which is, by the way, the easiest way to get into real estate investing, period, without using your own credit, your own money.
Right.
You know, you can, if you don't even have a car, you can take your bike and drive down, you know, your neighborhood and find a house that looks like it's abandoned, it looks like it needs some TLC, or, you know, find a situation where maybe someone's, facing foreclosure by door knocking and so forth, right? So that's the easiest way you can find a property. So, and once they do that, then, you know, through our classes, through our book, or if they were to come to us, you know, we show them how to skip trace and get in touch with the owner of their property, and how to, dialogue to gain their, you know, figure out what their motives are, why they may be interested in selling their property. Or it could be a property where the owner's out of town. You know, there's just so many properties in Houston, no matter what side of town you're on, that, you know, that deals happen. But, you know, we show them how to make sense of the deal. And either if the deal makes good enough sense, we'll buy it, or one of our partners will buy it.
Okay. I don't want you to give all the game, because I think there's a lot of stuff that y'all would teach, a lot of value that y'all add within your program, within your company. But I think, at least so just for the audience's sake, I want to at least see like one red flag that you would see a lot of new investors, or new wholesalers that are trying to get into the game, that they are doing, that you advise against, like within your program. Like when you see somebody going to approach a seller, for instance, like they will approach a certain way, but that may be like the exact wrong way versus how you train in your program. So can you give us an example of that?
I mean, first of all, you need to understand the market, you know, before you try to go and give somebody an offer. You know, a lot of folks will try to just pull up an offer off of Zillow, and just kind of assume what the estimate repairs are going to be and so forth. So it's key to knowing your market, knowing your numbers, and so many folks are novice to you know, walking through a house and estimating certain repairs. But there, you can guarantee they're going to put a number on there that they think, you know, it may take truly $50,000 to do it. They're probably going to put $5,000 in repairs, knowing, you know, it's nowhere near, just to try to make sure that their spread is a lot more. They hear that you can make a lot of money in real estate, so they want their margin to be bigger than anything.
And that's
so.
That's the worst thing, because when I see, I automatically, and that's like you were saying too earlier, like it's the first time you do that, it's a wrap for you.
That's a wrap.
Bro, man. Like
you see that name pop up in your email list.
No one wants it. Yeah, exactly. You don't even look at what they send you.
I swear.
Exactly.
You don't even look at what they send you, man. But I mean, you know, it goes back to figuring out, really, really listening to what the seller wants. what they want and what type of situation they're in. You know, so many folks be just motivated to just try to lock up a contract. It's not just all about that. Sometimes you have to take, you know, it may take a month, but it could also take a couple of hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But make sure that whatever you're promising them, whatever you, you know, saying that you could deliver, that you can deliver, and you just not guess me. And if you don't know what you're doing, that's okay. There's so many real estate investors in Houston, you know, credible real estate investors in Houston that you can, you know, get guidance to. It be open to giving up a deal or working with someone like for us. We, you know, sometimes we'll, if they don't know, we'll do five deals with you. And, you know, yeah, you may have to give up more of that deal, but at the end of the day, you know what it takes to go out and, you know, basically, you know, do a deal, basically. And, you know, we kind of, what is it, lead the horse to water. So, man.
And that's I think, a good point people need to understand, especially when you're getting into anything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to make so, like, the first deal doesn't matter. Even if it's going to, like, congrats if you're going to make $50,000 off a wholesale. Congrats. But in the grand scheme of things, it still doesn't matter. Because you, I'm not going to say you got lucky, but the next aren't going to be that easy, right?
It's,
and each one is going to be different. And I think that's a common theme from a lot of successful real estate investors in terms of when you're sourcing off-market leads is looking to be a problem solver, right? And not looking to just make money, right? Because when you're approaching these people that are trying to sell their homes, they don't necessarily care about the money or the home. They're trying to get out of a situation. Right. That's their biggest thing. So helping them, even if it means you might not even get the deal, right? I've literally seen that where some wholesalers just like they lose out on a deal because they wanted to, number one, keep their name good and, you know, be credible in the eyes of the seller, and then also just within the industry. So they lose out on a potential deal just because they tell the truth to the seller in terms of like, I'm not going to even take this like at this price from you because this is just, I don't want to do that to you. Right. So it's just, you know, like you said, being an ethical person. So,
I mean, we've done deals where we actually lost money in a sense that, you know, we didn't make any money on a deal. We knew we weren't going to make any money on a deal, but it was a situation where, you know, this lady, she was just in a situation. She really needed help.
Yeah.
We even paid for movers to move her out of her situation and found her apartment and so forth. You know what I'm saying? So don't focus on the amount of money you're going to make on a deal.
Yeah.
Go in and assess the situation, talk to the seller, see, you know, like figure out what they need. You know, that's that they're the primary, you know, person that should win out of that deal.
So,
you know what I'm saying? You and don't all be so focused, like, you know, Chris Senegal, you know, always say, like, you go into these neighborhoods, don't be so eager to try to, you know, get somebody out of their house. Figure out a way that they can stay in the house.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially in these, you know, our black neighborhoods, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, so, but yeah, man, you got to go in with the ethical approach with, you know, be charismatic and just kind of approach it as if it were your family members.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? These are sensitive situations at most times. So, yeah.
I think one thing that I'm seeing with that is that a lot of people are taught like the very basics. They talk to the fundamentals of what wholesaling is. Go find a property, to take the ARV, 70% of that, subtract repairs, and that's the price you need to go look for. So now they know that information, and they're going to approach somebody just trying to get those, fit to those numbers.
Right.
So they're not even thinking about the ethics of it all. They're not thinking about helping the person out. They're just thinking about, I need to hit these numbers. And I think that's one great thing that your program can add is that you're actually teaching them the philosophy of how to approach somebody and make a win-win situation out of the deal. And I think people need to look at what you're providing as something that can help them out, not only financially, but also like mentally, because once you have the mental aspect of it all, you can understand the philosophy and the approach that you need and how people operate as far as on the seller's end.
Right.
So like you have to understand how to talk to those type of people and be able to relate to their situation a little bit more. And I think a lot of people don't gain that knowledge when they're learning how to get into wholesale. So on top of just the financial aspect, I think that'll be huge because that'll make you much more prominent in that wholesale space once you know how to approach these people.
Right. It's a people business, bro. You know, no matter what you're in, no matter what type of – whether you're in a restaurant or what, it's the world moves – by relationships and people. Point in case, I had a deal in just actually a recent deal, probably last month, month before last, in League City. Made 50 grand off the deal. How it happened was,
So
basically, I had a friend that referred it to me. This lady, she didn't really, I guess she was up in age and didn't really want to live by herself anymore. So her daughters, which were probably about my age and so forth, we kind of just sat down and figured out what they wanted, figured out what they were trying to do. They were trying to put her mom into not really a home, but she's still independent, a specialist, some sort of apartment complex that kind of caters to older folks, mm-hmm. right? So, and just wanted to get rid of a home. She didn't really, she just already knew the number that she wanted. She just wanted 50 grand for it. That's all she wanted. Wow. She didn't care what I made or anything, But had I gone in with the approach of, just really not being aware or just putting my motives up front, mm-hmm. instead of just listening to what she want, who knows what could have happened. I could have lost the deal altogether, but yeah. It's about relationships. So, exactly. That's all she wanted. So we definitely, gave her what she wanted, helped her into, to her new living facility and so forth. And long story short, we made 50 grand off the deal,
Wow.
Yeah, it was a hot market too. And beautiful home, just needed a lot of work. But at the end of the day, it was easy.
Yeah.
How'd you come across that one again?
I was a referral.
Okay. Yeah.
So, like I said, it's all about relationships, yeah. man. People going to send you deals. And, I took care of the person that gave me a referral. Most people want to give referrals like $1,500. If I'm making 50, I gave her 10 grand.
Jeez. Nice.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, man.
Love to see it. I want to kind of get into a couple of other things that you're doing before we wrap up here mm-hmm. in a few minutes. Because I know you mentioned, you're doing the private lending. You was also in the trucking game as yeah. well. You had 11 yeah. trucks. Yeah. Can you kind of talk about just, a few of the other things y'all got going on in terms of also, with the private lending and then.
Right. So, again, I've only been, I guess you can say I've been lending all my life, but, in the wrong sense. But I've been lending and making money for the last year. I actually started right prior to COVID. So,
are you private lending or are you hard money lending?
No, private. Okay. Well, I take equity positions. So I put money with Quest. So I have a lot of money in, Morgan Stanley and those type of houses. But I put some money with Quest. What Quest is, right?
The retirement.
Yeah, Quest is you have a self-directed IRA. Yeah, yeah. So I put money in a self-directed IRA, and then I just, I lend it towards certain projects, basically. Yeah. Started with close friends, that were flipping properties that had experience, first of all, and then, it was a decent spread of what, the potential that we were going to make. And then, COVID happened. So COVID happened, a lot of hard money lenders stopped lending money yeah. and just – held on. So I just said,
"You go
screw
keep
it." Yeah. So I loan money. We had to sit on some projects a little bit longer than we anticipated. But at the end of the day, I grasped the concept of how lending works, basically. Mm-hmm. So and I never really cared for make 10%, 15% or whatever. No, I want from the beginning. I wanted an equity stake.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I know. Certain folks that I was dealing with, they weren't going to be able to make the monthly payments and so forth. So I had to lean on the property and all that and just take an equity position. And,
so you were lending to everyone, like even novices?
No. They need to know what they're doing.
Okay,
they need to have some experience.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Yeah. Or it was just an easy deal to where, we basically bought a house from a bank. That was a bank I had put up 250 grand on his house, but the house didn't need any work. We didn't need to do anything to it. We just had to put it on the market and sell it. But it took, because of COVID and everything, I think that's really why it took longer. It was, we were anticipating it taking about 3 months to sell, but it took like 6 to 7 months to sell.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we had to reduce the price a little bit. So my cut, I wound up making a little bit over 20 grand out of it, which wasn't really, the best return on my money. I guess had I done points, right, I'd have probably made a lot more. But we both anticipate the house selling 3 months or whatever.
So, you're lending primarily flips in developments?
So I've done – well, yes, mostly flips. But I got like 9 townhomes going up now. So those are new developments. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. So, yeah.
Wow.
You know, so but I've also gotten in a situation where, you know, I have a developer, you know, permits in the city of Houston, I don't know, because of COVID or whatever, they're taking a lot longer than anticipated. So the project, you know, was scheduled to be done by, we're targeting October, November, but it looks like it's going to go into 2022. You know what I'm saying? So you got to deal with those situations because of city and so forth. And then I had one lender that, took some money and towards this particular project and did it to complete another project. So, you know, you got to watch out for those things. So I'm learning that now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm definitely
Or do you lend only in Houston?
I've only lent in Houston so far, yes.
Okay. But you okay with expanding outside of there? Like, just for ourselves and for the audience, anybody is might be looking.
Well, I'll take it case by case. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Deal by deal. Like I said, I'm not – it's just me by myself lending money. So I only have a certain amount of funds. In fact, at this point, I'm not lending any more money until I get some of this stuff returned.
Yeah. Right, because you need you need your money. Start right, back right, to you right, before right, you start right.
So,
it back out.
So, yeah. Okay, so sure. I'm limited at what I can do. What was your other question?
Oh, I mind that. I kind of asked about the trucking game, but I mean,
Trucking, yeah. So, how I got into trucking probably about 4 years ago. One of my cousins, he got into the trucking game. Long story how he got into it, but at the end of the day, he owns Iron Horse Freight, which is a big company here in Houston. He has like 40-50 something trucks. So I started, I just bought a truck and just kind of put it with him and bought some other trucks, put them with some of my other friends. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced trucks sitting on a side for months, because of either mechanical issues or driver issues. But overall, I can say it's been good though. So I got 11 of them.
How long you been in it?
Since probably about 3 years now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's up, man. That's what's up. Yeah, I'm in the game too. I got one truck.
You got
Not for my
any issues? No issues yet?
Oh, I have
plenty
bunch
of issues. That's why so me and him laughing back and forth.
The
for
driver?
Not everything. The driver is like solid now. I got in the game. Literally, I bought my truck the week before COVID. It's like literally I got it on the road the week COVID, and then like stuff was decent, but rates took a dive, and then by summer, my driver was like, "Yo, I'm not making no money." Mm-hmm. So he was like, "I'm out of here," and I couldn't really do nothing about that. So it was like my truck sat from like June to December, I lost a lot of money in 2020.
I mean, that's the name of the game, man. Yeah, you just got to keep pressing. I expect to lose on a lot. That's expect to fail. I expect to. I'm always going to try to put my best foot forward, but I understand that, in the investing game, you take risks, right? You want to take calculated risks, obviously, right? But at the end of the day, you can't win unless you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That was a hard lesson. I'm sure those nine, however long, your truck sat on the sideline, you learn a lot about the business.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about yourself and your thresholds and so forth. But you just caution yourself going into it. So many folks are wanting to get in the trucking game, wanting to get in the car rental game, wanting to get in the real estate game, and I don't know if that's always been the case or if it's now because I'm just seeing so much of it in my environment and on social media. Mm-hmm.
I think it's now.
I think it's a factor of the current situation. Like with COVID plus social media on a rise, and people are just becoming more aware of the information because everybody's now more people are putting it out there. Us, for instance, we've been putting it out there since 2018, and now people are finally catching on to it. There's more people that are sprouting up from the people that have learned from us, and people that have learned from EYL, stuff like that. So So yeah. Just information is continuing to expand from top to bottom, basically.
Right. So I would advise, you know, folks not to get involved in anything that either they can't control or they don't really understand. You know, trucking is just easy to get into, you know, but now you got cryptocurrency, you got, you know, all this digital real estate, you got all these things to where, you know, you can make capital. You just sit down and do a little bit of research, right? Mm-hmm. So, and you can't really control trucking because you're not a driver yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you have your own authority or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that takes a lot of energy and a lot of focus. So yeah. I, for one, you know, just leverage my partnerships and my relationships with folks, and I'll invest more so in them.
Yeah.
You know, invest in them and their situations. So that's how I stay, you know, pretty much grounded, you know, and not stressed out. You know, I already anticipate things not going completely, you know, ideal, right, the way that I want them. But, you know, yeah, man, that's just keep good energy, good karma, and good people around you, and you know, anticipate something not going right.
No, man, that's dope. That's dope. So we want to wrap up the show. So what we want to do with one – and I want you to do this in like 1 minute. Right, so
no pressure.
Yeah, so just I can't even talk. We want to get into the last segment, which is the Fast Five. So this is where we just ask you five questions, and you
answer
them in 10 seconds or less. So I'm gonna take the first one, and we'll alternate. So first question: what does success mean to you?
What is success? I mean, happiness, joy, peace, growth, family. You know, all of that. You know, financial is last, basically.
Yep. At some point, financial might be first, but not right now. It's last. Everything.
Yeah, because if you don't have, you know, have a grounded heart and love around you and support, sure, that don't mean anything.
Yes, sir. All right. Question number two: what's your favorite money or business book?
You know, everybody goes to Robert Kiyosaki. I mean, you know, I think, you know, that's Rich Dad Poor Dad is a classic. So and that's one a lot of folks know that kind of started me out. So I'm gonna stick with that one.
Yeah, cool. Same. Cool. Third question: would you rather have $1,000 a week for life or $1 million today, and why?
I'll take, you know, $1,000 is cool, but I'll take $1 million because I know how to invest it, and to where I can make a lot more than $1,000.
Yes, sir. All right, question number four: if you could go back and change anything about your journey, what would it be?
You know, I mean, that's a hard one, because, you know, I wouldn't probably be as well-rounded in a lot of different things had I not had my journey. But if I could change a lot, is you know, I would take more risk. I would be more confident in who I am, you know, because I think, like, in growing up in the corporate world, you know, yeah, I've excelled, but I was kind of, you know, I think I kind of suppressed myself because, you know, I didn't know my capabilities and so forth. So I would move through life with a lot more confidence and expectancy of great things and more belief in myself.
I love it. Last question: where can people find out more about you?
Again, my Instagram is Tony B for Profits. Also, Homebuyers Texas on Instagram. TonyBforProfits.com is my website. Obviously, and like I said, I have my books on my website or on Amazon. But yeah, you can easily, and the quickest way to find me, and, you know, I'll respond to DMs pretty fast on Instagram or Facebook.
We love it. Well, there y'all have it. That's a wrap on this one. I think the first in-person guest was a success, man. We appreciate you coming on here, man. We're super excited to continue to, you know, put out content like this with guests like you, man. So, you know, when we become the biggest financial podcast in the world, then, you know, we definitely
have you back, bro.
We definitely have you back, man, and get you some more clout on your page. Yeah. We appreciate you, bro.
I appreciate you guys, man. Definitely. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Honor to be here. And, you know, that's just kind of a testament, because I set a goal to kind of do a lot of podcasts and just kind of put myself out there, which I'm not used to, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I said, this is my sixth podcast so far this year. And No, six or seven podcasts. I think I've done three here. My third one here, right, Mike? You know, and
Mike's I'm the producer.
Yeah. You're right. And you know, I'm excited to do more. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, man.
Yeah, we love it. Well, that's it. That's it for this episode of the Money Monopolizers podcast. Hope you gained something of value from it. If you did, we'd appreciate it if you hit that. Oh no, no. We'd appreciate it if you rated us 5 stars and left us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find out more info about us on IG at Money Monopolizers. Or on YouTube, you can hit us up on there as well. But other than that, we'll see y'all in the next one.
You've been listening to the Money Monopolizers podcast, helping you take control of your financial destiny. To learn more about how you can be in control of your money, visit moneymonopolizers.com. We'll catch you next time when Alex and Marlon share more personal finance and wealth creation tips with you. Now it's time to take action.